Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into Letterman Row. We have taken a little bit of a hiatus from the YouTube content. We're back on the Letterman Row YouTube channel after spring football is over. The transfer portal is open. Only two Ohio State Buckeyes have entered, and maybe that's why we took a little bit of a break, because it has been a slow time in Columbus in the transfer portal window. But that is Andy Baxter on the other side of that screen. I am Spencer Holbrook. Andy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It hasn't been slow at all for basketball, but for football, it certainly has been definitely quieter, and that's definitely a good thing for Ohio State. I think that Ryan Day said before the spring game, he wasn't expecting a lot of people to hit the door and look for another place to play for this season. So I think that, you know, his word is kind of rung true the last week or so. And the two guys that did enter, Dallin Hayden and Cedric Hawkins, I don't think were overwhelming surprises, especially with Dallin Hayden. That news broke probably a week before spring ball ended anyway.
Yeah. So with Cedric Hawkins, you lose a depth piece, potential playmaker down the road, but it looked like a second developmental year for him. For Dallin Hayden, best of luck to Dallin at Colorado. He wanted more carries. He's going to get them, especially now that Dylan Edwards from Colorado has entered the portal. Dallin looks like he's going to be running back one. It all makes sense. The couple others that we thought maybe, hey, this guy could go in the portal. You know, did the Buckeyes lose a quarterback with all five guys, you know, on the roster having five scholarship quarterbacks? Maybe that's somewhere to look. No, because it just hasn't happened yet. Now the portal is still open for another 7 days, and it still could happen at any position with any player because it's college football in 2024. But the bottom line is it hasn't. And so Ohio State is in a slow period right now, Andy. And that's why we're not going to talk much about the portal. We're instead going to focus on the best, the worst, and the biggest remaining questions for this Ohio State offense out of spring practice. We had spring superlatives last week at LettermanRow.com. We've written a lot about each aspect of the offense, and now we're going to talk about some of the best and the worst and everything that goes on now that spring ball is over.
Yeah, I mean, we can just get right into it, I think. I mean, where do you want to start of those questions?
Let's go with the best. What was the best thing from this Ohio State offense? That's a loaded question. What was the best thing you saw from this Ohio State offense this spring?
Yeah, I think the obvious answer is Jeremiah Smith. We can definitely dig deeper than that, but that's the superficial one. We just got to knock out right away. I think when Jeremiah Smith came to the program, everyone had high expectations for the number one overall prospect in this cycle. But, you know, you never know with receivers, how are they going to make an impact their first spring? How are they going to make an impact their first year? You know, at most schools, a lot of these first-year receivers at Ohio State would start automatically. With Ohio State, you just don't know. Even with Carnell Tate last year, had an excellent spring, an excellent training camp, and played a role in the offense, but wasn't maybe the player that we thought he would be, just in terms of impact. Nothing against Carnell Tate. It's just the way things go at Ohio State with the amount of talent. But Jeremiah Smith has just been such a wow player this spring. You have to think that he's certainly going to for starting this year, and to see that kind of impact when you lose a Marvin Harrison Jr. at that X receiver spot, I think to have someone coming in that's also a phenom is certainly a good sight.
I'm going to take the best of spring ball, just keep with the skill positions, the running backs. Like, I think it might just be seeing Quinshon Judkins in Scarlet and Gray. And maybe tomorrow we'll have the exact same answer for a different player on defense, just seeing this guy in Scarlet and Gray. But like, when you walk into the room for the first time, or walk into the Woody for the first time this spring, you see Quinshon Judkins and Trevion Henderson working out together. oh my gosh, like it kind of is, it makes it all seem like a reality. And I guess the same could be said for number four, Jeremiah Smith, because there were so many times where that recruitment could have very much went the other direction. And Ryan Day kind of taking that sigh of relief when he found out that Jeremiah had made it official with the paperwork. So, you know, it's one of those things where both of our best of springs might just be seeing guys in action. But I love the Jeremiah take. And then I also, you know, had to add in Quinshon just because, you know, he brings a different layer to this offense that even Trevion can't. And I think Trevion is a special player. I've always been very pro Trevion Henderson, but he's like a home run guy. And I think Quinshon Judkins adds a little bit of that pop that you need in the running game, especially with Chip Kelly's system. The best of this to me this spring was seeing Quinshon Judkins just getting his workouts in and seeing the way he operates and getting to know him a little bit and talking to him. It could be a very special year on the ground for Ohio State, but then you also have to add in, like you said, the passing game and with Carnell Tate and Emeka and Jeremiah and right on down the line, you know, the skill positions are not lacking for talent at Ohio State this spring.
Well, with Quinshon, it's really interesting because Bill O'Brien comes in and Quinshon Judkins immediately is thinking Jahmyr Gibbs, because that's what Bill O'Brien did with Jahmyr Gibbs before he went on to having such a great rookie year with the Detroit Lions. And you're thinking, okay, how are they going to use him? Two backs, you know, maybe kind of that split role as receiver and as a runner. Well, the next best thing is to have Chip Kelly come in, who's worked with dual backs pretty much his entire career and has made the most of having both there. And I think, you know, just seeing them start in the T formation in the spring game, not that they're going to run the T formation a lot, but I do think they're going to run a lot of two back sets and having a lot to do with both those guys on the field at once. And I think that was sending a message that, hey, it's not going to be necessarily 1A, 1B. These guys can just be equals and they can just be on the field at the same time. And I think we're going to see a ton of that. And I wouldn't be surprised if both of them rush for 1,000 yards this season. And so for Quinshon Judkins, Bill O'Brien, yes, that was going to be great for him, but Chip Kelly might even be better for him. And that's just been the weird thing about this offseason with all these weird changes with the coaching staff and some of the players coming back. It's just like it keeps upgrading for Ohio State in moments in which you think maybe they'll take a hit. I mean, even in the spring window, right? People are just bracing themselves for a hit. When is this going to happen? When is it going to happen? And maybe that just doesn't happen. Maybe they just continue to upgrade. I mean, that's just one of the things that's happened this offseason.
Yeah, if I had an honorable mention for best thing that happened this spring, it might be that Chip Kelly was hired, because he has completely changed the dynamic of the Ohio State offense. You know, you're talking about a lot of quarterback run, a lot of, more concepts in the running game. Diversity in the run game is kind of the name of the game right now. Can't really talk about this offense without saying the word diversity of the run game. It's almost like a buzzword at this point, but that's because it's true. And, you know, the way that Chip Kelly's going to use Quinshon and Trevion and maybe even the freshman backs with Sam Williams Dixon and James Peoples, the way he's going to use Will Howard or Devin Brown, whoever wins the starting job in the run game, is going to have a huge effect on the passing game. I think that's one thing we keep forgetting. It's like whatever they do in the run game, if both those backs have 1,000 yards, like you just said, maybe that's your first bold prediction of the season. I'll have to write that down so we don't forget that you said that on April 23rd. But, you know, if that happens, it opens up a lot of possibilities in the passing game that we simply haven't seen really from Ohio State since 2020 with Trey Sermon, but more so 2019 with J.K. Dobbins, where they had a 2,000-yard back and you had to account for him so much that it opened up downfield passing for Justin Fields and Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and KJ Hill. And that was really explosive because you had to account for the run game. If you get the run game on track, it's going to help the passing game. And what we saw from the passing game in the spring is that, like, there's no shortage of talent at wide receiver. I know I'm not breaking ground there, but with the talent they have on hand, if you get that run game started with Chip Kelly, then it's going to mean good things. And I think you started to see that a little bit in the spring game, the way they were running the football in the spring game. I know it was two-hand touch for a lot of it, but it can set up a lot of things in that passing game.
Yeah, I think they're excited what they can do with the inside zone stuff, especially. We even saw Quinshon kind of rip off one of those runs early in the spring game. James Peoples and Sam Williams Dixon also had a touchdown run kind of off that same concept. And that was also the Sam Williams Dixon run was shortly after Aaron Nolan pulled it on a zone read. And I think just that kind of blend of having the quarterback run in there, again, it's not going to be the quarterback power, the quarterback ISO, these design quarterback runs necessarily. It's going to be this, you know, run pass option. It's going to be the zone read, you know, giving the quarterback options to read the edge, make a decision in the moment. And I think that's going to be the unpredictability that you get from this rushing offense. And, you know, the one thing that we talked about last year with Kyle McCord, and a lot of people were very hard and on him, and some of it was deserved criticism. He wasn't always the best in moments where he needed to be, but he was also not dealing with a running game that was really that effective for most of the season. And when it was effective, it was because Trayvon Henderson was just doing some magical things in the backfield. And yeah. I think that's just another element that needs to be said. I mean, so now with the quarterbacks, they should be really helped by not only the running back duo, but also the scheme. And hopefully, as we'll get into, an improved offensive line, although there are still question marks there.
Yeah, we get a good question from the chat. Are we going to see better blocking from the receivers and tight ends this year if we're going to be a running team? That's a great question. I think the tight ends, if we want to start to transition here a little bit, maybe go position by position, but not really break down all of them. But, you know, if we go position by position, you go to the tight ends. I think this unit is set up pretty well to have a good blocking season. And that's not a slight on Cade Stover at all. I thought he was a capable blocker, a willing blocker. He wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty, and he did at times. And everybody, nobody's perfect. You know, Cade said that best that at the combine where he kind of got a little frustrated with a reporter who asked him about blocking. But Will Kaczmarek adds a little bit of a blocking element that I don't think Ohio State's had since probably Luke Farrell. Like, he is a good, solid blocking tight end. I think Bennett Christian, in the way that he's built, can be a good, solid blocking tight end for Ohio State. And then you add in the receiving prowess of G. Scott. We saw what he could do. I think it was against Rutgers last year where he had a touchdown catch on a crazy catch. He could have had another one. He dropped the ball over the middle, but he's usually reliable. And then Jelani Thurman as a receiving threat. I think you are going to see some pretty good tight end blocking. And I'm not sure if you need as much receiving blocking because it's going to be a little bit more between the tackles with Chip Kelly than it was last year with Ryan Day calling the plays. And so I think your tight ends are going to get better blocking, Andy, this year.
Yeah, it should be. And also G. Scott, I felt like, was impressive last year as a blocker. Yeah. I know that wasn't a strong suit of his when he made the transition from wide receiver to tight end. But I felt like there were certain plays that, you know, I'd have to go back and look at the specifics of them. But I remember watching in the press box last year, home and away, just being like, oh, that was G. Scott that really made that run kind of spring forward. And I think that, you know, that's a big improvement for him, and he can kind of do it all at this point. So that's why I think he's the front runner for tight end one. But how that all shakes out is going to be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if Keenan Bailey just rolls those guys. He's kind of like the James Laurinaitis approach, where if you got guys that are ready to play, they're going to play, that kind of mindset, rather than just trying to stick with one or two. But if only one or two can go, then only one or two are play. So that's going to dictate who is out there. I also think Patrick Gerd will maybe take on more of that Mitch Rossi role. We saw a little bit of that in the spring game. He's always talked about how Mitch Rossi was a guy he looked up to, another walk-on turned, you know, player that was a contributor in the offense for Ryan Day. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of that action. Chip Kelly has, you know, used fullback type players at UCLA. I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of reintroduced to the Ohio State offense. We didn't see a ton of it last year. It kind of took on the role of Caden Curry and, you know, different players back there. Caden McDonald at one point in the bowl game. So, you know, maybe Patrick Gerd is a more steady option at that fullback type tight end kind of role.
Yeah. And, you know, the quarterback run changes everything as well. I don't know if you have to be as good tight end blocking and receiver blocking if the quarterback is a running threat that has to be accounted for, because it just takes another guy out of the system, out of the defensive system by default. So I think, again, not trying to be repetitive here, but by default, I think the blocking will be better because there's probably going to be one less guy to block on almost every play because somebody has to account for the quarterback, or Will Howard or Devin Brown, whichever one it is going to be able to pull it and get a few yards if you're not accounting for him. That makes everything easier on wide receiver blocking, on running back blocking, on blitz pickup in the passing game, on quarterback run for the running backs, on tight ends. Like, I think it makes everything a little bit easier if the quarterback is a running threat. And so it might make everything a little easier for those blockers, right? Like, the receivers and tight ends may have a little bit of an easier load to carry. Let's move forward here. Is there any, what maybe, how do I say this? I don't want to say the worst of, we're not going to give a worst of spring ball and just sit here and roast somebody. Is there a – what are you the most concerned about, Andy, with the Ohio State offense coming out of spring practice? Let's put it that way.
I think with the spring game, you know, I would have – I understand why they did it the way they did with the reps with the quarterbacks. I think almost selfishly, and I think all the fans would probably say the same, they would have liked to see maybe a little bit more from both Will Howard and Devin Brown to get a split screen like comparison of the two quarterbacks. And both of them I thought were impressive in the limited action that they had, but it was really limited action. We saw the most about Julian Sain and Aaron Nolan towards the end, and a lot of Lincoln Kienholz as well. And we really didn't see too much of Will Howard and Devin Brown. And I think that, you know, I don't think that's necessarily concerning, because it's not like, oh, they performed poorly in the time they did have. I thought they were both good again. But it was a small sample size. And especially with Devin Brown, where consistency was an issue for him, I would have liked to see him throw, you know, 15 to 20 passes instead of seven. Will Howard, consistency-wise, was not always there in the spring practices we got to see, especially with some of the downfield passing. It was tough with the wind. I think that was another kind of element to it that made it difficult. But those kind of factors, again, didn't necessarily make me concerned, but definitely – raise my antenna of like, well, I see that they want to get all these quarterbacks reps and want to get them all involved, but I don't think we got any closer to being like, okay, yeah, they're good there, or okay, yeah, that guy's in the lead or whatever. And maybe that's the way Ryan Day wants it, to be honest. But from us trying to evaluate the situation, I don't think it moved the needle for me at all.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you just didn't really get a lot. So full disclosure, the media, you and I, and the rest of the media, we're not the only media, but we got to watch Student Appreciation Day with some of the students and see the quarterbacks in full action there. We got to watch the day before the spring game, the full practice there, and see some of those guys rip throws. Other than that, though, like, even we didn't see a lot from the quarterbacks all spring. It's not just, you know, that fans are being left in the dark on what the quarterback competition is, because in all reality, like, that's the way Ohio State wants it. But like, a lot of the people who are supposed to be inside there and supposed to have, you know, even the people who are quote unquote sourced up, they just didn't really get a lot of intel on the quarterbacks this spring. Like, is it Devin? Is it Will? Is it Julian Sain? Is it Aaron Nolan? You know, is it Mason Maggs? You know, you just didn't learn a lot from the quarterbacks. And I think from what I've been told for a couple different angles and working some people in the building, I think Will Howard had a really good last couple of weeks. So I think that helps him, and I think Ohio State understands how good he can be, you know, in a full 11-on-11 full contact setting, because he's kind of a brute to bring down. But the reality is, like, you didn't really see a lot from spring because they're in non-contact and they're both kind of similar players. And, you know, who's more consistent? Well, we don't know, because we weren't in there the whole time. So I agree. Like, I think one of the concerns is, like, we just don't really know a lot about these quarterbacks. And the other thing that kind of ties into it is, you know, everybody's concerned about the offensive line and will they be able to protect these quarterbacks? Because yes, Will Howard is durable, but it's a 16 or 17 game season. Devin Brown's had his durability issues, and it's a 16 or 17 game season. We still don't have a right guard at Ohio State right now. And I think that's my concern heading out of spring practice. It's not even the biggest remaining question for me, which we'll get to. It's more just the biggest concern for me, because, you know, the old saying is, if you've got two, you've got none. Right now, Ohio State's got three right guards. So what does that mean? You know, I've always heard, if you've got two, you've got none. What does having three mean? Is it Carson Hinsman, who didn't play as much center as Seth McLaughlin in the spring game, and Seth McLaughlin played those first team reps of center and didn't practice at guard? Carson Hinsman was at guard, you know, and Seth McLaughlin didn't take any guard reps. That leads me to believe that if Seth McLaughlin's playing, he's a guard. I mean, he's a center. And if Carson Hinsman plays, he could be either. You've got Luke Montgomery there. You've got Tegra Shibola there. Do any of those guys step up and take that job? Or do they have to move Josh Fryer into right guard and then find a tackle? That's my big concern right now. Right guard appears to be a spot where not even Ohio State is settled in on. Maybe like it's a competition between one or two guys. And so now that it's a three-man battle, you just don't really know how that shakes out. And if Josh Fryer has to slide inside, I think it becomes even more concerning. And so exiting spring and seeing what I saw in the spring game actually leaves me a little bit concerned with where the state of the right guard spot is here on April 23rd.
Yeah, I think it's a much better spot to be in trying to figure out right guard than either of the tackle spots, which is where they were at this time last year. Once you have the tackles set, especially in terms of pass protection, you're feeling a little bit better about where you could be. And with the guard situation, at least they do have options. And it's a matter of figuring out what is the best fit. I did think it was interesting that Luke Montgomery didn't take any first team reps at right guard in the spring game. Again, spring game is one of 15 practices. But that being said, given the atmosphere, given the event that it is notable that he didn't take any first team reps there, especially because at the beginning of the spring, felt like he was the front runner at that position. He's still definitely in that competition. It's not like you can rule him out at this point because a lot needs to happen in training camp. But Tegra Tshabola and Carson Hinsman were the ones that were taking those reps with the first team offense at right guard. And I think it's interesting with Tegra Tshabola because we really looked at him as a tackle through a lot of this process. He was competing at tackle last offseason. He was competing at tackle even early into this spring ball. And then we're seeing him now more at guard. All of those players, though, are really intriguing because the potential is there for all of them. I mean, talk about Carson Hinsman, right? And it's kind of easy to be like, well, they brought in Seth McLaughlin, so maybe Carson Hinsman isn't going to play this year. Well, clearly he's had a really impressive offseason because if he's even made himself part of this conversation, that's notable. So it's not like they don't have options. But the other thing that Chip Kelly said is that you need options. You need 10 starters going into this season. It's the same thing with the quarterbacks. Like, you want the more depth, the better, because you don't have a waiver wire. You can't pick up these guys. And I think that was kind of a selling point for staying with the program and not hitting the portal this spring, because, you know, you could leave for somewhere else and then you could look back on the situation and be like, well, hey, if I just stayed, yeah, I might have been third or fourth string at the start of the year, but I was actually in a spot to potentially contribute in the CFP.
Yeah, we get a question from the chat, Mello, number seven. He's always here. Thanks, Mello, for being here. What's up with Shambly, the OT from the portal from Arkansas? That's Andrew Shambly, who left Arkansas's program in the winter, did not go through spring practice anywhere, and now is scheduling visits at Colorado, Kansas State, UCLA, Virginia Tech, Indiana, and SMU. In a transfer portal that is weak on offensive linemen, and all of the top programs are looking for offensive linemen, that visit schedule does not lead me to believe that the biggest and best programs around the country believe that he can play and start at a high level. Every program in America is looking for an offensive tackle in the transfer portal. They just are. Every single one of them. If you've got two, you know, even when Ohio State had DeJuan Jones and Paris Johnson, if there was a tackle they thought could help them down the road, they would have taken one in the portal, because everyone knows how important it is to stockpile offensive line. And if the biggest programs are not going after a guy, it leads me to believe a lot. And so that's where I think that is. I don't think Ohio State's interested there. And to be honest, I don't think Ohio State's interested in anyone in the portal right now on the offensive line. You know, a lot of guys are in the portal, and from what I've heard, the cupboard is kind of bare in the portal, according to some folks I've talked to, just as far as top level, the Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, Michigan level talent on the offensive line is simply not there. And so that's where I think that is. But thanks for the question, Mel. Always appreciate you being here. In all of our live streams, you are always here. Andy, biggest remaining question. I wrote six big questions for Ohio State entering the summer on Wednesday. Or, wow, it's only Tuesday. On Tuesday at lettermanrow.com, we're here. It's officially spring is over. We can start asking the big questions. What is your biggest offensive question heading into the summer and exiting spring practice? You've seen them practice. You've watched the spring game. You got to have at least, you know, 10, 15 big questions. But I guess I'm asking for maybe for just one, and maybe we'll get to a second round, but if we have time.
Yeah, I mean, there's the easy, like, depth chart questions that I won't really tackle because everyone has those same questions. One question I have just from a philosophy standpoint of this offense is, what does this look like with Chip Kelly as the play caller? What is the balance between Chip Kelly and Ryan Day on certain pivotal decisions in game? How does this look in terms of aggressiveness with Chip Kelly calling the plays? We talked a lot last season about Ryan Day needing to be more aggressive, needing to kind of bring that same tenacity and ferocity to the play calling sheet that he did against Georgia in the Peach Bowl. It felt like at most times that was met. At certain pivotal times, of course, against Michigan, that wasn't necessarily met. What kind of aggressiveness does Chip Kelly bring to the play calling dynamic? And what does that mean for this offense? Because I think everyone's expecting and wanting this offense to get back to scoring 40 plus points per game. And part of that equation is really just bringing it almost merciless, you know, with these early games and the schedule. I know they want to work depth. I know they want to rotate. Maybe they even drag the quarterback competition into the season. I don't know, but I think you got to set the tone early and score a lot of points and bring it with the aggression. And I'm just curious to see what that dynamic looks like between Ryan Day and Chip Kelly.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because we don't really know what Chip Kelly looks like as a pure play caller. He's been a play caller at Oregon, and that was when they were running the everybody wearing neon socks and we're going to run 90 plays a game and you're not going to be able to stop us because we're running 9 seconds between each play. That's not what Chip Kelly is anymore. And then he was a play caller in the NFL, but the NFL is not this. And then he was a play caller at UCLA, but he was also the head coach. So he wasn't devoting every single bit of his resources to play calling, even though it was pretty good when he was calling plays at UCLA with that run game. We just don't really know, right? Like, what is his philosophy on fourth and three from the 43-yard line? And does he have a say in that? Because Ryan Day ultimately holds all three timeouts in his pocket. Chip Kelly doesn't. So that's a great question, Andy. It's not one that really has been talked about a lot, but what's the philosophy there? And what's the leash like with Chip Kelly as far as, you know, going for it? Or is that a Ryan Day decision as far as, you know, not putting your defense that you know is going to be the best in the country in a bad spot? Or is that a Ryan Day decision? Or is that a group decision with Chip Kelly and Jim Knowles and Ryan Day together? Those are great questions that I think as we get closer to August 31st against Akron, we're going to have Ryan Day is going to be asked, I think, as we get closer to that, especially because Jim Knowles has head coaching aspirations. Chip Kelly has previous experience as a head coach. Ryan Day now a CEO role, not really being the head coach of the offense, not the head coach of the defense. He's just the head coach. And so like who holds those cards and who gets to play the cards? My big question coming out of this is what is that Travion Quinshon split like? And what does it look like? You know, there's a lot of questions that I do have, but most of all, I want to know what that split looks like. Travion has been vocal since his recruitment that he was cool with playing with two backs. That's why he and Evan Pryor committed 2 weeks apart because they knew that they were going to play with in a perfect world, Evan Pryor would have never gotten hurt. And this is now an Evan Pryor, Travion Henderson backfield. And those two are really good and they're splitting carries so they can get to the NFL with, you know, not a lot of tread on the tires. Well, Quinshon already has the most carries of any player the last 2 years. And Travion has had a couple injury concerns. So how do those carries get divvied up, Andy? And how do they keep these two both extremely fresh and extremely ready for a national title run? That's my big question about this offense. We got a lot of receiver questions answered because you can do a lot in 7-on-7s and on air in the spring. But as far as running the football goes, and getting a feel for the carries and what Carlos Lachlan wants to do, because we really don't know a lot about him. We just don't know what the split's going to look like between these two titans of the running back position. And I'm very curious as to how that works out.
Well, you mentioned Carlos Lachlan, and he talked a lot in his intro presser about working with five NFL backs at Memphis. And the list includes Tony Pollard, Antonio Gibson, Daryl Anderson. You just kind of go on. And I think his message in that was that, don't worry about that. We'll be fine. That's not a worry of mine. And I don't, you know, I think it's a good question to bring up. I think it is a big pivotal question because, you know, they didn't come, you know, Quinshon Judson didn't just come to Ohio State to have minimal carries. Like, he wants to be used in the offense, of course. I just think that the way that Chip Kelly can utilize two running backs, the way that I think that they'll use them in the receiving game, they'll probably get that screen game back into play. I think that Ryan Day has touched on that a little bit, back to some of that J.K. Dobbins action that we saw back in the 2019 season. I think that that's going to be back in play as well, so the touches will be made up in the receiving game that maybe are lost in the running game. And I just don't think that it's going to be too much of an issue because, as you've mentioned throughout this show, they're probably going to be playing more games than they have been. And so at the end of the day, those stats might not even look much different than what they were this season. Certainly for Travion Henderson, I mean, Quinshon Judkins' stats might be different because he's not going to be carrying the ball 300 times. But as far as the yardage, I think both could get over 1,000 yards if they both stay healthy. I really don't think that's that crazy. I don't.
No, but there's that prediction again. I like it.
Yeah, I don't think it's that crazy. I really don't. And I don't think that Ohio State's going to have a 4,000-yard pass rush. I don't think that they need to do that. I think they need to rely more on the running game. I think they need to be more balanced. And I think they can be, especially with the creative schemes that they can kind of come up with Chip Kelly there. So I think that it'll be worked out, but it is a good question to be asked. I mean, clearly, you know, again, we didn't get the full reasoning for why Dallin Hayden left, but you have to imagine he wanted to be the featured back and wanted more carries. And now he's at Colorado. So it obviously is a question of what it looks like for carries and everything in terms of what the offense is going to shake out. But I think both those two will be fine.
Let's go rapid fire to end this out, Andy. I did the biggest riser, the biggest surprise, and the spring MVP of the offense at LettermanRow.com last week. Maybe I'll change my answer in the last week since I've had a lot of time to sit and ponder. When I thought I was going to be doing some transfer portal reporting, do you have a biggest surprise from the transfer portal? There's a lot of surprises in the transfer portal. Do you have any surprise? The biggest surprise in the Ohio State offense this spring?
Yeah, I'm going to go kind of a wild card and just say Josh Simmons, because Josh Simmons was a player that came in last year and it was kind of a question of, would he start right away? Where would he play? Would it be right tackle? I feel like we were all focused on right tackle. No, he goes immediately, starts at left tackle, has some early season struggles. Penalties were still an issue, which came over from San Diego State, and just some blocking issues in terms of not measuring up the technique to his athleticism. Well, over the course of the season, he got significantly better. Towards the end of the season, was one of the best offensive linemen for Ohio State. And now the way they talk about him and the way he talks, it just seems like he's made this huge step to where, you know, you were talking about portal offensive linemen earlier, and it is hard to find them. Well, it looks like Ohio State got a slam dunk in Josh Simmons, at least from everything we've heard and seen so far. And he feels like he could be maybe the best offensive lineman at Ohio State this season, you know, definitely competing with Donovan Jackson for that honor. And they're both on that left side, which they seem to be pretty content with. And just maybe how content they are with Josh Simmons was surprising to me in a good way, you know, for Ohio State, not in like a bad way or they shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't be content with him. But just the fact that they feel that confident after just, you know, less than a full year with him and him still being relatively raw, I think was a surprise.
My big surprise on the website was that Julian Sain has immediately ruffled some feathers in the quarterback room and moved up that depth chart. You know, maybe Josh Simmons will be blocking for him at some point because, you know, if Julian Sain's in the game, then that either means that he's taken the starting job or the backups are in. So you don't know. But, yeah, I like the Josh Simmons pick. It's a good one. If you want my full pick, go to LettermanRow.com. Good insight from Andy there. Andy, biggest riser or mover on this depth chart. I'll just go ahead and get mine out of the way. I picked TC Caffey because by default he's moved into RB5 at least. But the way Ryan Day talked about him, man, is he RB3? Running back 4? Or is he just that fifth guy? Were they blowing smoke and giving him some reason to, you know, stay positive and keep working hard? Or is this a real thing? Who's your biggest riser up the depth chart?
Yeah, I'm just gonna go with Bryson Rogers just because perfect. I think
great pick.
Because we've talked about this wide receiver room, and you brought up a good question, Ryan Day, after the spring game about wide receiver depth. And it is something that's weird to ask because Ohio State's always stocked with wide receivers. But just seeing the receivers that were out there, obviously Brandon Innes was out with an injury, and he should be back. At least all signs point to him being back for training camp. But, you know, Bryson Rogers, he's a guy that was in the transfer portal for a minute, decided that was the wrong decision, came back, and I thought he was impressive all spring. And he's a really good route runner. He actually just posted a video on social media the other day of him running routes. Just looks really twitchy. He's always been praised for his catch rate inside the Woody. I think that maybe, you know, shows up a little bit this season, maybe 10, 12, 13 catches. And even just making a difference like that in year two for a guy that was almost out the door, I think is notable.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's one of my favorite players from the entire spring practice session. Just the way that he worked, the way that he didn't really say much. He just put his head down and went to work, and it paid off for him. Not in the spring game. I think he had a little bit of a rough spring game, if I'm being honest. But the good news for him is the Buckeyes take it as a 15 practice sample size, and they don't just look at the spring game as the end all be all. And through 15 practices as a whole, you know, on the whole, he was pretty good. Last thing, Andy, put you on the spot a little bit. The spring MVP for the Ohio State offense.
Yeah, I mean, we're just not doing it right if we don't say Jeremiah Smith. Like, there's just no other way. I mean, I don't know. I feel like he's the wow factor. He's everything you would want in the top overall prospect. He just had the virality of his catches, the instant impact. And another guy that, similar to Bryson Rogers, doesn't talk a lot. I thought it was really funny watching the spring game back, because of course we were there in the press box, but I watched it back on the broadcast. They had this whole interview set up with Fox, and they were interviewing Emeka Buka and having him to talk about Jeremiah Smith, and he's standing right there, and he looks like he's just looking out in open space, like almost not even present, like he's in his own zone. And I think that that's the way they talk about him, just someone that's always locked in, always doing the right thing, showing up early, staying late. And I think if you're an Ohio State fan, you love to hear all of that, because the guy that just left, Marvin Harrison Jr., pretty much did all of those things. The loudest he was with the outfits he wore, and Jeremiah Smith is kind of following suit with, you know, not talking a lot, but showing up with the catches he's making.
Yeah, now you're making me feel dumb, because on the website, I did not put Jeremiah Smith as spring MVP. He actually won best freshman, and then Julian Zan was the biggest surprise.
So I get it.
So my spring MVP was Chip Kelly, just the innovation that he's brought. We talked about it earlier in the video. We don't have to rehash everything, but the diversity in the run game, the innovation. Maybe I was just coming off of that high from listening to him talk at the coaches clinic, where he broke down one play for an hour and 10 minutes in just an hour straight of just one play in his arsenal. And now I think I could run it. Maybe not at a high level. I might pull something. But I think I could maybe teach it a little bit, just because of how much I learned from him. Listening to him talk is a joy. Watching him coach is a joy. He's having a very good time doing it. And I think that he has kind of reinvigorated the offensive innovation at Ohio State. And, you know, I'm not saying that everything Ryan Day did went a little stale last year. It just didn't seem to click as much. And I think you're going to see something click a little bit better. And that's why Chip Kelly was my spring MVP. You know, for the Ohio State offense. Andy, any closing thoughts on the Ohio State offense and the spring that the Ohio State offense just had before we get out of here?
Yeah, I would just mention a few guys that, you know, are players in this competition going on for certain positions that I wasn't necessarily expecting. Like Jaden Ballard felt like a guy that was maybe just a depth piece throughout his career. He's someone that seems to be in the mix now for this rotation for the wide receiver room this season. Can he actually break through and be a guy they can count on in big game situations? That's yet to be seen, but the fact that he's in there is notable. Even someone like, you know, in the tackle group, George Fitzpatrick, I felt like he made a rise in the spring and also was part of that discussion for depth, because, you know, if one of those tackles goes down, who's the first one up? Would it be a Tegra Shabola? Would it be a George Fitzpatrick? You know, Ohio State's gotten really lucky in the offensive line. That luck won't last forever. At some point, they're going to need someone to step up. George Fitzpatrick's another name to know. So there's just a couple guys that come to mind of just like, you know, players that maybe I wasn't thinking about when the spring started, but certainly can't be ruled out going into training camp.
Yeah, oh, that's a great point. And there's some guys that definitely need to be shouted out. So I'm glad you did that. You know, that we just didn't really get to. And, you know, another guy, your guy, David Adolph, thought he had some bright moments. Walk-on receiver. Like, the receiver position is, again, the depth is a little bit of a concern. So if you're talking about guys who are going to make an impact Sunday through Friday, those walk-ons, man, those walk-ons are going to make a huge impact. Even if TC Caffey isn't a big part of the offense, Sunday through Friday, he's going to have to be a big part of what they're doing, you know, because of that. And so, you know, there are definitely some guys who deserve a little bit of praise. So I'm glad that you did that. Andy, started this at 4 o'clock on Tuesday. Wednesday at 4 o'clock, we're going to do this entire thing all over again with defense. Maybe we even get the 41-year vet Tim May involved in that one. I know he loves talking the Ohio State defense. And then on Thursday at 4 o'clock, we're going to do a little bit of this, but for the guys who were in the NFL draft from Ohio State. Should be a fun little 3-day stretch here of YouTube content for all of the people who love Letterman Row content. Speaking of Letterman Row, go to lettermanrow.com right now. If you're not already subscribed, you can subscribe to lettermanrow.com, become a Letterman Row member, and instead of getting $1 for your first month, you get $1 for your first 2 months when you use the code OSU1. That's a YouTube exclusive. That's right. When you use the code OSU1, you get 2 months for $1. That's right. Your first 2 months of Letterman Row coverage will be just $1. That should get you through most of the summer, gets you into the recruiting calendar where Matt Parker and Alex Gleitman are going to have it all covered over there. We'll see you guys over at LettermanRow.com. We'll see you guys back here on the YouTube channel 4 o'clock on Wednesday for another breakdown of the Buckeyes. Next time we'll do the defense.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.